Good afternoon, everyone. This is Joe Varnador. Welcome to the Wednesday afternoon. Are we good, Matt?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, welcome to the Wednesday afternoon non-call. Kevin is taking some time off this week, so it's going to be Matt and I today. Sorry we were on late. I had some internet problems here, and so we were trying to get that figured out. So, Matt, I know we've got several things on the board there. I'm still trying to log in, so I've called in, so I won't be able to see your screen at this point. But if you want to go ahead and let's read off what we've got there and get started.
All right, perfect. I'll go ahead and pull in Daniel, see if he's available. And he is not, so he did say he might or might not be available. So I'm going to go ahead and just read the question. And then, Daniel, you can go ahead and listen to the webinar archives here afterwards. So the question was, if we buy a property that has a land contract, I was under the impression that if a borrower defaults on their loan, we can become the rightful owner on the property within 30 days. However, I have just heard that we might have to wait longer to actually take possession of the property. Can you elaborate on this process?
Matt, that is a great question, and we have had a tremendous amount of questions on land contracts the last month or so. So this is another good test here as we kind of go through the process. Number one, if it is a land contract. Typically, and let me just kind of back up here just a second so we can kind of get an idea of what's going on. So there are three types of security agreements. The first one is going to be a mortgage and note, and we all know what that is. There's the note is the security, is the promise to pay, and it requires a judicial foreclosure. There's also a deed of trust, also known as a trust deed, and that one is a little different in that it doesn't require judicial foreclosure. And then we have the land contract. So the way land contracts were originally done was that they were used many years ago because it was just an easier foreclosure process. Basically, you're contracting for the deed, so I'm going to hold on to it as the property seller. And then once you pay that loan in full, then I'm going to transfer the deed over to you. And really, we've kind of foregone, or there's really not a foreclosure process. It's just a notice process with 30 days. Well, move forward to where we are today. And what's happened is that it just depends on this one if there is something called equitable interest. So if there was equity in this, we would have to go through the regular foreclosure process. If there were not, if there's not equity in this, which there's not based on it being a non-performing loan, then you should, depending on which date is this one in, Matt, do we know? Matt?
Sorry, it was muted. No, I don't, but let me look back in the archives of his emails and see if I can find that real quick.
Okay, no, it's not a problem. Typically, it would be a process. You're going to have to go down and you're going to file just as you would a regular foreclosure. I'm assuming that when you bought the note, you have the deed or the servicer has the deed. So you're going to have, depending on which state you're in and or which state the loan is in, there may be some different things that you'll have to go through, but it should be a pretty easy process for you to go through based on that. Okay. So, Matt, did you find out where he was from?
No, I didn't get that. He's just saying that there is one he was looking at, but he didn't actually give the actual asset number he's looking at.
Okay, very good. So it should not be a real difficult process to go through since this is non-performing. Now, if it were a performing issue, then it would be a different story. But No, you just need to go ahead and call the local attorney that you're using, or have your service, or go ahead with the process and make that happen.
All right.
All right, Matt. So I'm trying. I do actually have my computer up now, but I still can't get audio through it. So I can kind of see what you're doing. So, yeah, so let's go ahead and we'll move to the next question there.
And I guess everybody took the day off and decided they were going to. I know there was one. Our last question is going to be on here, but I think everybody decided they were going to take the day off and just listen to archives. So we'll go ahead and.
Got.
So
okay, so I the second one here. Okay. If I can scroll down here. No, you're controlling the screen, so I can't scroll down. You'll have to scroll down, Matt.
Yeah, I should be all the way down and showing the first and second question now. Okay, actually, Keith Warrington has a question for you on the land contract deal. He's wanting to know where. What about Oklahoma, where recorded contracts must you foreclose? So I'm guessing you're saying you have to record the land contract in Oklahoma, so that would be a place you'd have to foreclose on. Can you kind of talk to that process?
Yeah, and so Keith's asking about Oklahoma, and we know everything has to be recorded in Oklahoma, but Keith, if we're dealing with a non-performing Oklahoma, the issue of equitable interest wouldn't be there, so you probably will not have to go. I'm thinking you won't have to go through the entire foreclosure process to do that. The fact that it's just recorded, it has nothing to do so much with the foreclosure situation. It's whether the borrower actually has interest in the property, and we know that with a non-performing loan, there really isn't. There is no equity on the buyer's behalf. So, yeah, that's what that looks like. So we've got a question here from Mike and Michael Rogers, and I'll go ahead and read that one while we're going through this and talking about this. Hopefully that answered your question, Keith. Does Colonial Funding ever buy a sell interest-only notes? I am sure some of the bundles of notes bought by Colonial Funding will contain some interest-only notes. If so, are these sold to students? Are they good investments to work with? Typically, unless it was just something that there was one in a pool of 200 or 300 and it was a winner-take-all type situation, interest-only loans are can be very tricky to quote. And the reason that I say they're tricky to quote is because they always should contain a balloon. So I may do something like finance a property for you, Michael. It's $100,000, and you're going to pay me 10% interest on it, and it's you're going to pay me $900 a month for 10 years, and then it's going to pay off. So the discounts are typically going to be very, and this is really more of a performing question, but I'll go ahead and since we're right here, I'll do it. The discounts are going to be very large when there's an interest only loan, especially if the balloon on the loan is way out there. Now, typically you don't see these out there any more than 3 to 5 years, but we're usually not buying interest-only loans as a rule, just because of the fact that it's the discount because it's a long time before you can collect it. So typically, we're not buying those. Second, does Colonial ever buy or sell? Oh, okay, I guess it got put in there twice. All right, so let's see if we. Okay, good. So we've got those. Matt, let's go to the second one here. It's Rudolph Francis, and he's a Diamond student. He's going to be forming an entity this year to buy non-performing notes. Rudolph, what we're going to do, what you're really going to do on this is You can use Anderson Advisors. They're still, even though they're not on the website, I don't believe they are, Matt, they are still a recommended vendor for us, even though we are really using Guardian Law for most of our most things like this now with Note School. So I would suggest that you go to Guardian Law and talk with them. Let them know what you're going to be doing, what your goals are with this particular entity you want to form. It's going to be either an LLC, or if you're going to go the corporation route, you can go with a regular C corporation. Probably wouldn't advise that. I don't think you need a full-blown corporation, but certainly a subchapter S corporation would be appropriate for that as well. So, so I think that's the best place to go. And again, you're probably looking at either an LLC or a subchapter S corporation to buy your non-performing notes in. That's I think that'll take care of that one. Matt?
Yeah, Joe, I hate to jump ahead to any of the commercial part of it, but the Deitz Botterford class that's going to be at the Summer Summit would be a great class for him to attend too, with the asset.
Okay.
Because they're talking about, creation of entities so that it protects your assets and minimizes your tax burden and stuff like that. So that's another.
Well, you know the old thing about that. If you don't pay your liabilities, your assets in jail.
Exactly. Oh, is that Joe? I see making his appearance.
I'm cutting it out there. let's see. So what do we have? We've got a couple of questions here as well. Les says, have a non-performing note in North Carolina. The person left before I got the note, so I'm assuming I just bought an REO. I have the quitclaim deed recorded in the land contract assignment. The land contract itself was never recorded. I'm assuming I don't have to foreclose. And you know what they always say about assuming something, Les? We probably shouldn't do that. Les, I would certainly go ahead, and I'm assuming that you have, there's another assumption, right? So I would think that you would have a this boarded with one of the servicers. I would have the servicer look into this and check to make sure that this is the case on that. Let's see. You have the a quit claim deed recorded, okay, in the land contract. You should be good. You should be good, but I would just make sure that I have my servicer just check into that, and you could certainly have them run a, or you could check, go to the website for the local courthouse there in North Carolina and see what it looks like on there. So I would just make sure that that is the case, so you'll, can sleep better at night. All right. Let's see, we have Sarah, and Sarah says, is there a document or website that details if a state has to have land contracts recorded? Example, Oklahoma. Matt, is there something like that on the website?
Not that I know of, but I'll look into that right now. But not that I know of. I know we have all of the states as far as actual note and mortgages and their timelines and if they're judicial and, but
right.
I don't know that we actually have something for land contracts. But if not, that is something we definitely would be nice to be able to create. It's just,
Right. And, there's just a couple of states that are like that. Oklahoma just happens to be one. And obviously you can, there really isn't a, land contracts aren't as well. Banks just don't use land contracts. Lenders, typical lenders, don't use land contracts. Some of the folks that we deal with do originate these as land contracts. So, but Oklahoma is the only one that we're definitely sure on. But we can certainly look into that and see what's going on. Is Joe able, Joe LeCount, is he able to, can we unmute him, Matt?
Let me double check. Go ahead, Joe.
Good afternoon,
hey,
gentlemen.
Joe.
How you doing?
Good. Can you hear me, Joe?
I certainly can.
Very good. So what's going on? Are you back in the States or are you still in Brazil?
No, I just got back at about noon today.
Good for you. Good
yep.
for you. Well, in Brazil then, I guess.
It was nice and warm.
Yep, I'll bet it was. It's nice and warm here in Florida as well.
So, Joel, what you've got going on. Well, what I was wondering is it refers to one of the first question on the NPL. Say that I don't know on a $40,000 land contract. Say that they have $10,000 in equity, and because they've paid, something happened, it becomes an NPL. Is there a dollar limit? Is there a year limit? That type of thing, that a judge would say, okay, yes, this was a land contract, but there is enough equitable interest in the land contract that you'd have to foreclose, or is that going to be state specific?
I think I don't know that it's going to be state specific, Joe. It could be based on the determination of whoever you're sitting in front of, if you're, you know, going through a foreclosure on this, or if you're looking that way. If the property is worth $40,000 and it's a $30,000 non-performing loan, I would think that would be 25% equity in that property, and I'm very certain that at that point that would be considered equitable interest, even though it was non-performing. Now, if the property is worth $40,000 and they've got $3,000 in equity, and that's eaten up by late charges and everything else, then that doesn't sound like equity to me or an equitable interest there. But if somebody's got $10,000 in equity in a property or 25%, it's been my experience. I've always had to go the route of foreclosure.
Okay. So is it,
it's my experience, Joe, that if they've got somewhere around 15 to 20% or more in equity in the property, that you're going to have to go ahead with the foreclosure process.
Okay, that's a good rule of thumb then. Thank you.
I think once you get up to that 20% range, then I think that's where you're going there. So, and I do owe you a phone call still, so we'll try to get together sometime this week.
Perfect. That sounds good. Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks so much, Joe. Let's see, we've got another question on the line here. It's Eric Gullickson. I have a sub-performing land contract in North Carolina. It is after the probationary period that is in the land contract. There is no note at this point. And, Eric, it just really depends. And if you want to unmute Eric there as well, Matt, we can do that. Matt, you there?
Go ahead, Eric.
This is Eric. Hello, this is Eric.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
On?
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Good. How are you?
Hey, it's Joe. Good, good.
Good.
So you've got a land contract. Now, it depends on really who originates the land contract if there is going to be a note that's going to be attached to that. Anytime that I've used a land contract, and I used to sell a lot of vacant lots and land and stuff like that, I always did a land contract, and the land contract served as the entire agreement. So there are some people that will go ahead and attach a note to the land contract. So it really just depends on who originated it, as to whether there was a note attached to that. And a lot of times it'll say that this is the sole agreement. So have you looked this land contract over?
I did look it up, and it says in there, it's the typical Stonecrest contract. It says that after a 24-month period, that there, if it's going well, that there will be a note created, which was not done, and it's subperforming. So that's why I'm wondering what my exit strategies could be if I can't get them to reperform or do an adjustment on the mortgage. So, well, yeah.
Go ahead.
That's kind of where I'm at this point. So my question is, there is no note. So does that mean non-judicial foreclosure if there's also no equity? And does the judge make that determination? And then Joe's question and your response kind of helped iron that out as well. So
yeah, this is in North Carolina. There is not a note. And you know, and there is no equity in the property by the borrower, I'm assuming on the thing. This would be something that you should be able to go ahead and just act on the land contract, since there is not a note.
Okay.
I would advise my who are you having service this loan? Is it
Peak.
Still with
It's yeah, I bought it through Peak. It's going to remain with Peak. Yeah, you guys had it with Peak.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I just advise them to go ahead and pull forward on that. And continue with it as the note is not, well, there's not a note there. So it should be a pretty cut and dry process that you go through.
Okay. Very good. That answers my question. Thanks, Joe.
Excellent. Very good. So, Matt, it looks like something happened and I just got disconnected. So you're going to have to kind of stay on there. What do we have up next?
All right. Up next, we've got David, Cook, and Rhonda before. And so I'll see if they are ready. So. David, go ahead.
Hey, David, how are you? It's Joe.
And let me try Rhonda. There's two mics there for her, so.
Okay, gotcha.
Rhonda? One of your mics is self-muted. If you want to unmute yourself, you should be able to talk on the webinar. Go through this question.
Okay, I'm back in there, Matt, so I can see it at this point, so I'll just kind of move forward with it. Let me move this out of the way. So, apparently you guys were talking about this last night, is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a property that they have a tenant in, but they also have the borrower that is being, it's a land contract, so they're basically evicting the borrower, and they have a tenant in the property also. And so what we were trying to determine last night was whether there was a lease agreement from the previous owner of the property, or the potential previous owner of the property, to this person who is in the property right now. And so this question came up as a follow-up question, kind of just going on with what would happen if they did find that the lease existed. Joe?
Okay, so the question is, by the tenant's existing lease, or must now, David, Matt?
Yes, I'm here.
Matt, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Matt, can you hear me? Okay, good. Was that David that kind of jumped on there, or was that? I can hear you, yes.
So everybody, we're having some, I'm going to see if David has another link.
Matt, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, so just give me just a second here. So,
did I say that again?
I said you were just calling me there. I'm logging back in on the phone.
Okay.
So just give me a second. I thought I was going to have, the voice was going to be good through the computer, but it's not.
Okay.
So let me, I'm almost there.
Hey, David, I see your hand raised. Is this a good mic for you?
It is. Can you hear me?
I can. So let's wait on Joe. He's calling in so that we can...
I'm back on the phone there. So, okay, good.
And now, David, you have yourself self-muted, so you'll need to unmute yourself. I don't know what happened there.
Okay, so is that better?
Hey, David, how you doing? It's Joe.
Hey, Joe. Doing well.
Good.
You want me to fill you in quick on this one?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. We're going through the termination process of a land contract with the current owner of a four-unit building. The owner resides in one of the units, supposedly, and she has an existing lease with a tenant who occupies an additional unit. The other two units are vacant. So our question is, should we just assume the current tenant's lease, or must we assume the current tenant's lease, who's not, you know, this lady's not being foreclosed on, she just happens to live in the building that we are foreclosing upon, and if we shouldn't assume her existing lease, should we draw up another one for her?
Okay, so if this is a four unit and the owner lives in one of these and the other, and then you've got one tenant and you've got two units that are vacant.
That's correct.
Is there a lease currently with that tenant?
There is, and she has been totally cooperative with us. She provided a copy of the lease with us, or to us.
Right. Typically, you're going to need to abide by that lease because it's non-conforming, that's not her problem. So if you were buying, so you're going to have to abide by that lease unless you want to, and she agrees to redo a new lease with you.
Okay. All right.
But
yeah, the lease seems fine.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, typically anytime that when you buy, whether it's performing or non-performing, and there are tenants there, you're going to have to abide by that lease until the renewal comes up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. Thank you for that. And regarding the existing lease with this tenant, there's some verbiage in the existing lease that stipulates, for example, the landlord must provide a copy of the federal lead poisoning prevention pamphlet, and there's a few other things in the lease that specify landlord performance, and
right.
You know, we're uncertain if this landlord did any of that. So by assuming the lease that's in existence right now, when we walk into this situation and become the landlord, do we have to make certain that all of those landlord performance issues are addressed?
Right. So I'm going to answer this like Eddie would answer it. I'm even going to answer it. Well, you know, David, I'm not an attorney and I don't play one on TV. But, no, here's the thing. That was most likely a boilerplate lease.
Uh-huh.
That was that this person, this landlord, printed off of somewhere, and it had every possible caveat and piece that you could absolutely put in one of those. Now,
yes.
Since it's there, when was this? Do you know when this property was built?
It was built definitely before 1978.
Okay, that's where I was going
with that. The cutoff date.
Right.
Yeah.
So if there were lead paint there, you know, what would you have to do? You would have to go in, and they make paint now that you can cover over the lead paint and all of that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So, yeah, like I said, my opinion would be, you know, if it were there, then yes, you would probably need to have it. Something done with that. And you can check, there's some paints there now that you can go over that with.
Well, I'm not worried about if there is or is not lead-based paint there. I'm worried about do we need to meet the performance stipulations of the prior landlord that are in this existing lease? Like, do we need to retro sort of, like, meet these criteria that were established by some other person that we're just assuming the lease of?
You know, that would be,
okay.
I would think if I were an attorney, I would say yes.
Yes,
okay. It's in the agreement. If it were not there, then that wouldn't
exactly.
be it. And I never, you know, when I was renting out a lot of houses, I mean, I never put anything like that in the lease. But if it's
sure.
there, And you would need to abide by whatever is in that lease until it runs
okay.
out. Now, then renegotiate that lease. But, you know, yeah,
sure.
as long as this lady's paying and she's cooperating and doing all of that, yeah,
mm-hmm.
you need to take care of her and any of the challenges and meet any
okay.
of the requirements of that lease. Yes. I mean, that's
fair
in
enough.
Play. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, awesome. Well, thank you. That helps us out a whole bunch. I'm sure we'll have more questions, but we appreciate y'all addressing them for us.
Very good. Well, you just keep us posted on what's going on.
Will do. Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Matt.
Let's see. We have got a couple more questions here on the line here, so I'm going to go ahead and go through those, Matt. Let's see. Looks like we took care of Eric's there. Tim, how you doing, Tim? Tim's in Nashville. You can unmute Tim if you would like. Matt.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Hello there, Mr. Tim. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just had something to add to David's question, and you may have hit on it. You were kind of going in and out there at one point in time, and I thought I heard you hit on it. And if I didn't hear it, some of the others may not have, and that is if there is subordination language in the lease, which is very common in the work that I do, which is office leasing, I tend to think it won't be there. But if he'll look to see if the lease is subordinate to the loan, and it'll be under a paragraph called subordination, then
right.
he has the right to do whatever he wants, keep the lease or cancel it.
Okay. And that is more specific for office and for retail, commercial, that type of thing, right, Tim?
I'm sure the law is the same, whether it's residential or commercial, but it is something that I have not seen in residential in a little bit of work that I've done, but see it almost in every single lease that I do commercially.
Right, yep, that's true. So, David, what Tim is saying is if read through the lease, which I'm sure you have because you know very much about it. So, yeah, see if there's any type of subordination language in there that would allow for you to redo that or renegotiate that lease with that borrower. And, you know, probably, you know, what I would do, or that tenant, what I would do if I would probably, once I got through the termination process on this, there would be no reason for him not to go ahead and put together a new lease with this tenant.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yep.
To extend the lease, et cetera.
Yep. That's what I would do with that as well. So once you get this in hand, David, I'd go ahead and just do a new lease with this lady, and she will probably feel a lot more confident about staying there if you do that. So what do you have going on, Tim? You say you got a non-performing loan that you're foreclosing on.
I've got the asset in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, a nice little town home that I got, and I foreclosed on it and got it fixed up and got it on the market. I'm trying to avoid forced placed insurance, but everybody kind of backs up and goes, whoa, we can't do that. You know, you're holding it in the name of a corporation and it's unoccupied. Do you have any suggestions for insurance other than forced placed?
So it is vacant at this point.
Yes.
And but you own it now, right? You foreclosed on it, so you've owned it. So it's just a townhouse, right?
Yes.
You should be able to call any insurance agent and just let them know that it's empty and buy a policy on it. Just tell them it's vacant right now. I mean, you're the owner of the property.
The people that I talked to just a little while ago in that city said they just really backed up once they knew it was in IRA Innovations, the IRA administrator's name. And they also backed up and said, well, it's vacant, we can't insure it. So I've obviously got to talk to somebody else.
Yeah, just kind of Google a couple of independent insurance agents there in the area. I mean, I did one the other day on that. It's a house that we've got, and we foreclosed on that one. And, you know, we own it now, and I call my agent, and it's pretty close to where I am here in Florida. And he wrote it, and I think it was $800 a year, and it's owned in one of my entities as well. So that shouldn't be a big deal. Just call around up there. You should be able to get that insured with no problem. Now, one other thing, is there a homeowners association there with this townhouse? I'm sure there is.
There is.
So the structure should be insured under that master policy.
It's a townhome type community, and the dues are $30 a month. So I believe I talked about that also already, but I'll double check.
Okay. Typically there would be a not for $30 a month, but typically there would be a master policy that would insure all of the structures inside that, but the dues would have a whole lot more than $30 a month for that to be in place. So, but like I said, I did this house, we insured for $150,000. The other day, and it cost me about $700 to get it insured.
All right. Well, thanks for your help.
It was built in 2006, so, but it was a single family house, but it is vacant right now as well.
Okay.
So look around.
Thanks, Joe.
Very good. Tim, I hope to see you soon, my friend. All right, let's see. Joe says, shouldn't Dave purchase an assignment of rents immediately? Joe, he's already have the cooperation of the lady that is a tenant there. And so he's, you know, if it were all four of the units were occupied by tenants, I would certainly go ahead and pursue the assignment of rents on that. And that would have been in place, in place as well. So I would certainly do that. But since this lady is cooperating, then I would work with her and not confuse her too much through that process. Thank you, Teresa. I am doing, my nose is about half stopped up, so I think I do the voice better when my nose is about stopped up, half stopped up as well. Let's see, Michael Rogers, wouldn't the original owner who signed the original lease be the legal person responsible. A new buyer shouldn't be liable for sins of the past. That's just really going to depend on precedent in the area. Anytime you buy a property and there are challenges there, typically you're buying that with everything that goes along with it. So we shouldn't assume that when we're buying something like that. For instance, if we bought a property that, or foreclosed on a property that the well, I can tell you one case where there was a borrower that had a piece of commercial property, and he had a loan with Bank of America. He found that the property was highly contaminated. There had been a fuel dump there years ago, and so it was going to cost five times what the property was worth to clean the property up. And so he just decided that he would stop making his payments and Bank of America would foreclose on the property, and therefore they would be the new owner and they would be responsible for the cleanup. Well, Bank of America just satisfied that gentleman's mortgage and or loan, and just said, here's the satisfaction on this. You own it free and clear. You clean it up. So typically it's going to go, if you buy something and unless you're buying it subject to, then you're going to get what comes along with it. So Charles Sullivan said, in regard to lead paint, the lease is irrelevant. State and federal laws dictate landlord's disclosure options and obligations, and that's true as well, Charles. Typically, you don't see those types of things in a standard residential, either on a single family or a two-family or whatever it is. You don't see that type of thing there. So, yeah, that's what it is. Also, Roman and Bob Bullinger did say as well that builder's risk insurance can be something you could go after. Also, and Robin says, Tim, who did you call? State Farm, Allstate, don't have a clue. So you're right. That's why I suggest, and I have a lot of stuff with State Farm, and they would not write this particular property the other day in one of my entities. So call. I have a local independent insurance agent that represents 20 or 30 companies, and that's where I would go with that, and just make sure that you can get it done there. And also, Mike, you did say affinity insurance, which is a part of the affinity group of companies, would be able to do that as well. Mike, do you have a number for? If you have a number, just type it in there, and we'll give it to the group there. But Affinity does have a company that they own as well. So Kathy said he should use the insurance company on our website. That would be good as well. And again, Affinity was another suggestion there. So Mike, if you'll kind of type that in. They're located in Kansas City. Just type in Affinity, Google Affinity Insurance Group, and you should be able to pull that up. All right. Matt, what do we have that you need to go over there, my friend? Is that the content there? Is that what we've, the rest of that?
That was all that we had as far as content was concerned, yes.
Okay. Let me go ahead and give everybody this number here for Affinity Insurance Group. And it is 816-398-4070. So it's 816-398-4070. Or there's an 800 number as well, and it's 800-790-4872. 800-790-4872. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Michael, for putting that up for us. So, Matt, what do you have as far as Summer Summit and so on we need to go over?
All right, so basically just the Mr. Speed's Mastermind. We have probably two, if most three, spots that are still available. We've had some people are showing some interest, so if you do want to do that, go ahead and let us know you want to come to that event, which is April. So basically, the end of next month is when that'll be. The other thing is, and that if you want to know more about that, just log into your member or your member site. In the very first page, you'll see the hog hunt, which has filled up, and the mastermind, and everything that goes into that goes to the Child Welfare Board. So that video, that if you click on this, kind of tell you about that if any of the ladies want to come. Of course, only ladies are allowed to come to that, Joe, so I don't want to see you in a dress trying to sneak in or anything. So. Okay.
Well, you know what? There are so many nice ladies. I'd love to dress up and go do that, but I guess I won't now that I'm out. You've called me out on it.
Okay? I know. I could see your wheels turning. So the other thing is our Titanium Mastermind, which if you are going to come to it, you need to register for this. So instead of just kind of the spur of the moment show up, because there are some logistics as far as head counting for events and, you know, the tickets to the game, as well as the cookout and stuff like that. We need to know exact numbers so that we get the right amount and not too little. So, you know, that way nobody's sharing a plate or a seat at the game or anything. And if you go on to it's just noteschool.com/titanium/, and then you can actually register from that page and get any information. There is a special discounted room at the Airline Center, which is $99 a night, and there are some details about that as well on that page. So if you are planning on coming, you're coming to the Titanium Mastermind, and you haven't decided yet, please kind of figure that out and determine if you're coming, because that is coming here and right at a month now, all right, less than a month now. So the other thing, Joe, and I don't know if you've seen this, but there is a wonderful new video out there for the Summer Summit. So I'm going to play this, and I want to get your reaction to it. So.
Hey guys, it's Eddie. Summer Summit time, June 3rd through the 5th, 2016, is going to be at the American Airlines Training Facility right outside the DFW Airport. I think there's three dimensions to Summer Summit and the Note School family all getting together. I think there's process, I think there is the emotion of dealing with the business, and I think there's relationship. It can be due diligence. It can be closing. It can be boarding alone. It can be post-closing. It can be a creative exit strategy. What would the Note School Mega Experience team do? What would they do in this situation? We found that we can really go deep when we get everybody together with a like-minded process and a like-minded background. It's been said that entrepreneurs who can emotionally deal with what goes wrong survive. It's getting up and dusting yourself off and fortifying in your mind that you can do what it takes, even though there's obstacles in the road. Without relationship, I would have never built a note business and done the things that I've done over the past 35 years, and I don't believe you will be. Relationship means that you have somebody that's been through similar experiences and been through similar processes. This relationship cannot be replaced on the telephone. This relationship and the life friends that we make in the business is done at live events. You need to connect with people in the business that can inspire you, and those are the things that we are trying to make sure they're happening when we all come together at Summer Summit. All right, so remember, here's the deal. It's June 3rd through the 5th, 2016. Here's how you're going to register. You're going to go to noteschool.com/summersummit. Remember, we're having a one-day bonus class taught by Dykes Botiford. That's going to be on June the 2nd. So there's two registrations. There's one for Summer Summit. Doesn't cost you anything. And then there's the Dykes Botiford class, $250 for a primary, $200 for a guest, and that includes transportation and a meal at the Fort Worth Stockyards that evening. It'll be a fun time. Dykes Botiford's a brilliant guy. We'll see you at Summer Summit. Hank?
Joe?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
I saw your cameo in that commercial there.
I don't know who that good-looking guy was, but saw a couple of our other guys there, saw Joe LeCount there. He looked very engaged. So anyway, yes, that's a great video. All right, so guys, you do need to register for that. That is coming up. We'll blink our eyes, and it'll be there. Let's see. Tim has a question there that we're not going to be able to get to today, and I know that you're working on something for this, because Tim is asking, Matt, what are some creative ways to try to make contact with non-performing note borrower that is not responding to mail or phone calls? And I know that Eddie has tasked a couple of folks to work on and doing a mini lesson on that, so maybe we can revisit that on the call on Tuesday, and we can kind of bring everybody up to speed on that.
Yeah, Tim, if you will, please send that in to content. That way I have an email record, because I have to kind of keep up with all the content. And if you send that in, I will make sure that we note that and make sure to bring that up on Tuesday and get Mr. Speed and Charles's, and if Joe wants to show up, I don't know, everybody's input on that. So send that in, and that way I can kind of get it on the call and make sure we cover that, because that's a good topic.
Yes, that's a great topic, and we're getting more questions on that as well. And Patricia just had one final question there that we'll run through. If you foreclose in a judicial state, but it has a short foreclosure time, is there much difference than it would be with the non-judicial? If it's a judicial foreclosure with a short period, no, Patricia, there would not be much difference between buying a state with a short and then with the non-judicial process there. So it wouldn't make any difference either way. Matt, I believe that the office will be closed on Friday for Good Friday. So you guys have a wonderful Easter, and spend some time with your family. And tomorrow we'll be back on the performing call at 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow afternoon, and maybe I'll see if Matt, you probably won't be available because you'll probably be flying back to Denver, right?
No, I'm flying tomorrow night or early in the morning on Friday, so I will be here for the New Year. So
okay, very good. Thanks so much for bearing with us as we got started there. A little rocky there, but we'll talk to everybody very soon. And Lisa, I'll give you a call a little bit later. I just had a question for you. All right, so thanks so much, Matt. Have a good afternoon, and we'll talk soon.
You too, Joe. Good night, or good day.